Hi, family. My name is Rob, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Rob.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Chesapeake and Potomac region for asking me to come out and share. I'd like to thank them, first of all, for not making it a tradition that they've done about 5 or 6 times before now. I kept trying to tell them that I know something about steps. That's my strong point. And every year they tell me share on traditions, you know. And I used to catch feelings over it, you know. Because I thought they figured that, you know, all he is an NA police, you know, as the label was given to me, you know. And he doesn't, you know, do steps. But this year they took a risk, you know, and asked me to share on the 9th step. Also, like to thank some of my home group members that's here. Sponsees, friends, and everybody in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I deal with honesty and I deal with truth. And a lot of people that know me know that. You know, I take recovery seriously, but I don't take myself seriously. You know, this is in July, God willing, I have 12 years in this program. And I came in here. You know, traditions, steps, going to meetings, screwing up, you know, walking the fence, you know. And through that, you know, of bumping my head a lot, I've learned some things about myself, and I've learned some things about Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I first came here, I hadn't lost those things that I lost so many times. You know, some people, they can hit that bottom and decide, let me go get some help. Well, I had hit bottom for years and years, lose everything. And as long as I can get a job, I figured that I was okay. And then I'll lose everything, and I'll get a job, and I'll lose everything, and I was just out there suffering. Just hitting bottom. This is the first time I've ever gave a shot at recovery. In 1990, July 10th, I hadn't lost those things. I wasn't really going to get any help. I was going to take somebody else to the doctor. They ended up going home, and I ended up going to detox. You know what I mean? And that's how it worked. They called me up and asked for a ride. You know, but while I was there, something in me, because when I came in, I saw this one doctor's office, and I started to walk towards that doctor's office, and my buddy grabbed me and said, no, my doctor's down here. So I started walking down there with him, but when he went into the doctor, I got up and went back to the first doctor's office. And I walked in there, and for a guy like me that got the short man's complex, grew up in North Philly and South Jersey, you know what I mean? So I think I'm a little hip and slick, you know what I mean? And then going in the Marine Corps for 8 years and boxing for 5, you know, I thought I was a little thorough, you know. To me, to tell someone that I had failed at life and I needed some help, that was the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life. And I went in there and I told him, I said, I think something's wrong. He said, well, what's wrong? You know, and I had been, blood was coming out of everywhere, you know. And I had been like that for 6 months. And I wasn't telling nobody. And he said, you know, he asked me, he said, well, do you use drugs? Now, I had already, you know, tried to kill myself the night before. I mean, literally from all the drugs, pistol, knife, and all that, and couldn't do it. And he asked me, did I use? And I told him, I said, you know, I do a little something. You know, I drink a beer and smoke a joint every now and then. You know, and at this point, I had to have a fifth of liquor to go to sleep. Or I could not pass out, you know. He told me, he said, if you want to get your life together, you can go upstairs. I'll send you up to detox. He said, but right now, we need to get you stable, because they took some blood and they was like, we don't even know how you're conscious, you know. And they stuck an IV in one arm and they stuck an IV in the other arm. They put me in a wheelchair with the two things on the back of it, with the, both the IV drips on them, and they took me upstairs. And I told them I could walk, and I got out of the wheelchairs. And I went up there, walking down the hall, and they put the IV bottles on little rollers. And my first time, you know, at detox, and I'm going down the hall, and the first thing I'm looking for to find out how many women is on the ward, you know? And I came in there. I knew nothing about recovery. I knew nothing about Narcotics Anonymous. Nothing. Never heard of it. Not knowing that in 1978, when I was in the Marine Corps, that they had sent me to a AA meeting for driving drunk. Today, I know what that was that I went to. You know how they say, people say, you still going to those classes? You know what I mean? I thought it was a class. Well, it is a class for real, because you're going there to learn, right? So, 2 days after being in that detox, and I'm getting to the ninth step, because I want to show you where I was and what I was trying to do and what I'm trying to do today, right? 2 days after being in that detox, I was laying there and my life flashed before my eyes. And that was a hurting feeling. Not to say I think I'm all that because I have integrity today. I have a fifth step in my life. I know I'm somebody. I know I'm not a piece of junk. You know? I had went to college at the age of 16. Came down here to Howard University from Philly. And was majoring in microbiology. And kept a B+ average. And after 3 years of being there, I decided to go into the Marine Corps. And I went into a field that it wasn't that many blacks in. You know, I guess they didn't think we could do this. So what I'm trying to say is I had dreams growing up. And from using, all those dreams went down the tube. As I was laying there, I cried real tears because this is not what I wanted to be when I grew up. I wanted to be something in life. And this is what my life so sum total had become. And it hurt. And I cried like a baby. And I went to that night nurse. And I said, you know, they said I could stay here for 7 days. But is there anything else I can do? At that point, you talking about surrender and desire. At that point, if they'd have told me to get butt naked and push a peanut with my nose down the middle of Georgia Avenue, I'd have done it. That desire right there, when I was, that desperation, I wanted a different way of life. And she told me there was a guy coming in the morning, and he's going to talk to us about this place that you can go to for 28 days. And I said, 28 days? That's what I need. A vacation. And the guy came and he said, oh, they got an outdoor pool and you can feed the ducks and you get your own room, you know, and they play baseball and all this. I'm like, yeah, that's all I need. Because that's all I needed before, was just to get a, you know, get kind of together, and then I'll bounce back up. And I thought about my daughter. And I have a daughter. She's 20, and she'll be 21 in August. And she was taken out of my life at the age of 2. And I didn't have the privilege of seeing her at Christmas time. And I didn't have the privilege of seeing her first steps, and I didn't have the privilege of seeing her learning how to ride a bicycle, and I didn't have the privilege of going to her assemblies at school. And I didn't have none of those privileges. And but I can remember her coming to spend one Christmas with me. And me buying all these gifts. And then the night before Christmas, going underneath the tree and taking all the gifts. And that hurt. That hurt real bad. And I wanted to fix that relationship. I wanted to fix it real bad. I can remember my mom, who always been there. Real spiritual lady. You know, have a lot to do with the church. And her being in charge of the usher board and me sneaking in there and stealing the usher board money. $5 at a time. Because I'm going to put it back. $5 at a time until there was 500 and something dollars gone. You know, I owed my mom because my mom believed in me. All the time, you know. And my dad, he did the best he could. You know, when they say Papa was a Rolling Stone, we think dad was drinking more wine than we was. Yeah, I think Dad was drinking a little more wine than I was, you know. But that was my dad, you know. I wanted to fix everything when I first got clean, and I didn't know how. So I'm going to tell you about a couple of examples about how not to do the ninth step. Working it out of order, not being ready, and calling myself going to make amends. You know, I had about 90 days clean and my mom and dad was down. They had came down because I had another sister that don't live here anymore in this area. Well, in the D.C. area, and they came down, and we're sitting at the table, and I'm going to make amends. So I told them about me burning down the house in 68. You know, playing with firecrackers in 68 and burned down the house. And my dad said, boy, if I can get across the table, I'll kill you. Because that almost tore our family apart. See, some things, the person that was going to get injured on that one was me. That was me. You know, some things you just leave alone. But see, I didn't understand. I thought, you know, I'm clean now. Everybody supposed to love me, you know. And I got to tell the truth, though, because, you know, I'm different now. You know, they forgave me, you know, they forgave me. And then I went on a binge of trying to buy my daughter. She's my daughter, but I'm trying to buy her. You know, I'm going to make up for all those Christmases that I screwed up. So I start buying her toys that you don't buy little kids. You buy grown-ups. Because I want her to love her daddy. And her daddy don't drink no more. Her daddy don't get high no more. You know, her daddy's there for her. And she got a good daddy. Don't believe what your mama telling you. You know. And I tried to buy her. Until it came to a point where as though my paper wasn't as long as it used to be. And I couldn't buy her no more. But she was so used to me buying her, when she asked and I had to say I did not have it, she had that little tantrum. And I was like, but you're supposed to love me. You know? Now I'm going to tell you how I came up on the correct way of doing the ninth step. And when I say correct, my reality is my reality. It don't necessarily have to be the reality. My truth is my truth. It don't necessarily have to be the truth. So what I'm saying is what a ninth step means to me. Okay? What it means to me. This is not to contradict This is not the dispute. This is my own experience, strength, and hope. Okay? First of all, I'm a true believer that you know, these steps bring spiritual principles. And I just don't call myself working a step. I work towards that spiritual principle. Because I got a spiritual toolbox that I started out in recovery with, that when situations come up, I go into my spiritual toolbox and get spiritual principles to deal with the problems. So in the first step, I had to get some surrender because I had that powerless, right? So I had to get some surrender there. And that unmanageability, I had to get some acceptance, right? So I got that powerless and that acceptance, and that helped me to get honest with myself, right, in the first step. In the second step, what I had to do was get some hope and some open-mindedness. Because I thought when things happened good in my life, I did them. And when things happen bad, oh God, why me? In the third step, I had to get some trust and some faith. I had to get some trust and some faith because I wasn't used to just taking whatever came. I was used to working on the outcome, you know? I wasn't used to doing the footwork to put myself in position to receive the blessing. You know what I mean? I was just working on the outcome because I wanted it to work. It didn't work out right because it didn't work out in my favor. That's how I used to look at it. You know, in the fourth step, that courage, right? Because it's easy to point my finger. You know, it's easy to point my finger on why my life is where it is, or things happen. You done this to me, but if you didn't do that, then I wouldn't have done. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. Courage to look at myself and say, this is Rob. This is his life. Gone all those gory stories, because it's not a chastisement of all the things that I've done wrong. I got some good qualities. I've always had some good qualities. It's just that the bad ones overrode the good ones. You know? So that courage went a long way. And that integrity is what came out of that fourth step. In the fifth step, that integrity is what came out of it. But see, what happened was, you know, when I did a fourth step, I had a year and 2 months. So I was right about, you know, the terrible twos. You know about the terrible twos, right? When you think you got the answer to cancer, you know everything, you know how the meeting supposed to go, and you ain't doing it right. So instead of me getting integrity at first and at fifth step, I got arrogance. It was masked as integrity, but it was really arrogance the whole time. So people start moving away from me. They was like, oh no, he gonna start quoting the book. What page, what paragraph? You know what I mean? But I didn't know. I just wanted to recover. I didn't know. I just wanted to recover the best way I knew how. And y'all told me if I read the book and if I live the book that I get better. I wanted the hole to get filled. I wanted to change. I did not like the person that was inside my skin. I did not like him. I did not like that everything I did, it had to be a fight behind it. If I talk loud, I whoop your butt, then I'm right and you're wrong. That's the way I thought it was supposed to be. I did not like, people didn't want to be around me because every time they was around me, chaos broke out. I didn't want that. So I had to change. Looking at that sixth step and getting into some humility and not getting humble mixed up with humility, okay? Not getting humble mixed up with humility. And realizing that humility is my good and bad side. It's just me, and that's all. It's just me with my good qualities and my bad qualities. It's just me. But putting myself in position to work on the bad ones. Work on it like it all depended on me to change. And then that seventh is when, at the end of that sixth, when I'm all out of breath, I'm not going around my wife's recovery house and hiding behind the tree anymore. you know, tree boxing with a stick in my hand. With a stick in my hand, waiting for somebody to come down the street. And then they come down the street, they park in front of her recovery house, they get out and go next door. And I'm still standing there behind the tree with the stick. Realizing that my higher power is the one that's going to do all the removing anyway. Realizing that and getting some humility. When I did the eighth and ninth step, because my sponsor gave it to me as a package, he said it works hand in hand. It was hard to write down on my eighth step people that I thought had wronged me. It was hard. You know, I broke that eighth step list, and I got brotherly love out of it, right? And forgiveness. And I broke it up into three parts: family, friends, and finances. And that's when I realized that when I left the Marine Corps in 1986, after doing 8 years and making a staff sergeant in no time and getting all these presidential awards for the work I did in avionics and electronics, that when they kicked my butt out for drugs, I had got busted 8 times. They had zero tolerance. One time, you're out. They gave me 8 chances. Because when I got out, I couldn't look at military programs on TV. I couldn't. I had a resentment. They wronged me. Why ain't they? Because I was hanging with the sergeant major. They sent him to treatment and kicked me out. You know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, it was hard to put them down. But I had to look at, they gave me a lot. They gave me more chances than anybody I've ever heard of. Putting down two of my real close family members for growing up. You know, you grow up, you know, boys are curious, right? You grow up and you don't know. And sexually messing with these two family members. Wasn't no penetration, but I thought it was sexual. You know what I mean? Whether or not there's some mental stuff going on there. You know what I mean? And putting them down, and I'm like, well, you know, I just can't. Because growing up in our family, we really didn't talk feeling. The word was always, who got the killer? Who got the killer? That was it. You know? And so I would do things for them. And I said, that's the way that I would make that amends. And I went back to one of my network meetings, and we was meeting every 2 weeks. And I told the guys, well, I did this. Instead of, you know, what I did was an indirect amends. And they said, no, you need to make a direct amends. You need to directly amend that. And I told them I thought indirect amends was sufficient. And when I got out, when I left there, when it was over, I went back to my apartment, well, me and my wife's apartment, and one of them was sitting on my couch. And I was like, okay, I hear you. You know what I mean? You know how something happens, and you know no human person could have done it? You get that warm feeling all over your body. You look around like, thank you. You know what just happened. You know what's going on. You know? And I took her outside and I told her, you know, when we was growing up, I was wrong. And I did some things. And she said, we both did some things we didn't know, but I got my brother back. You know, I got my brother back. And don't worry about it. I said, what can I do to fix this situation? Because I wanted the justice that the ninth step talked about. Not the I'm sorry. To me, ninth step is putting it back like it was before my funky hands got into it. Repairing the damage. Not putting a band-aid on it. You know what I mean? Anybody can say I'm sorry. You know, so And she told me, she said, just be yourself. Be who you are to nap. Now, I can go and get things done, and I can count on you. If I got something going in my life, I know I can come to you, and you got my back. She said that meant more than anything in the world, and that felt good. IRS didn't want to wait until I got to that ninth step. They wanted their money real quick. And I thought, you know, because I ain't filed taxes in 7 years, that, oh my God, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And I called them up and they calculated and said, oh, you owe us a pretty penny. How much can you pay? I said, $25 a month. And this was thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And they said, okay. I was like, whoa. Thank you. And I paid them $25 a month on time. And halfway through it, they said, you don't owe us no more. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Because I thought, you know, I had came up with that I was going to jail. It's going to take every little thing I had, and I ain't have really much. You know what I mean? But I didn't know that you can go to them and work out a deal. I didn't know that. You know, some people on that ninth step are still on it. I have not run across them. My sponsor told me that if you got things on that ninth step that are spiritually blocking you from growing right now, you need to go out and seek that so that you can go on with your recovery. But if not, let God put them in your path and you'll take care of it then. I'm going to say something else. Coming around, I used to run with the cliches. And I'm going to say this and shut up. Coming around, I used to run with the cliches. And we had a lot of cliches, you know, back in the early 90s. Like, if you ain't working on recovery, you're working on relapse. You know what I mean? Remember we used to say that? You know, some people got to die so other ones can live. Boy, that was the harshest one. I did not know until I got in that situation. And a young lady that I had went to college with, her sister was using back in Brooklyn. And you know I came out my mouth with that. And she don't know nothing about recovery. Wrecked that relationship. I mean, friendship. That's all it was, is friendship. You know? And wrecked it is irreparable, I don't think. Because I said, you know, everybody's not in recovery. Everybody don't know what you mean. But to say, I think that was harsh. That was real harsh to say that, because she's like, what do you mean? My sister got to die so you can live? You know what I mean? I mean, you know, it's like growing in this program, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Everything ain't for everybody. Everybody don't understand. You know? One thing is, I'm glad to be clean. I'm glad to have my home group is a Stepping Out of Trouble group of Narcotics Anonymous, Georgia and Peabody, Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock. Okay, Stepping Tradition Study Group. If you ain't got one, get one. Find somewhere where you fit in, where people make you feel at home, that you're not afraid to share what's going on with you. And guess what? If you're lucky, you can walk in there, don't open your mouth, and somebody will know something's going on with you. Just by your body language and expression on your face. And I have that. And that's powerful. You know, my sponsor lives in Baltimore. And this brother's a good brother. This brother's a good brother. And he has some spiritual qualities that I admire. You know, and we've been through the steps a couple times. You know, he has some years in this program. Ninth step is a good step. All the steps are good steps. One thing I know, that the steps for me helps me to be maximum service to my fellow man and to my higher power. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Rob. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Walston.
Hi, family. My name is Walston. I'm an addict. Blessed with the gift of recovery. And I want to thank Rob for sharing. Thank my higher power for bringing me here. Thank the program committee for asking me to be a part of this workshop on the ninth step. I'm humbled. And I see a lot of friends out here. And I see a lot of friends I haven't met yet. And you are my friend. Or you wouldn't be sitting in the Narcotics Anonymous Convention. We got a common denominator that bonds us together. And, you know, I appreciate you, even if I don't know you yet by name. Lots been said about the ninth step. And I guess what I need to say is that I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous to make any amends. I did not come here for that. I came here because I wanted to stop putting that thing in my neck. I wanted to stop crawling around looking for some shit on the floor that wasn't there. You know what I mean? I know ain't nobody done those things, but, you know, if every now and then you kind of do like that, you can relate to something and help me get through this. You know, because this is a we thing. I know that God put me here because I need the most help. You know, and so what I'm going to attempt to do is share my experience of how I've learned to live the ninth step as well as the preceding steps. Rob did an excellent job of talking about those preceding steps. And I think that's kind of important because you just don't come in here and go to nine. You know, I'm reminded of my first year anniversary, and I had to stay stopped, first of all. I had, you know, there was a power that intervened. The grace intervened in my life. They had on blue uniforms. Any of y'all had angels like that in your life? And they put some handcuffs on me. Because I had been to a number of detoxes. I had been in a number of situations where the preacher laid hands, you know. A lot of things were attempted to help me with the disease of addiction, and I could not stop. I'm talking about caught up in the grips. I thought I really loved the death style. You know what I mean? Like playing on the edge. And by the grace, the angels took me to a place where I was introduced to you people. So I had to stay stopped, first of all, before the process could begin. So I had to understand that I couldn't interrupt the process if I was to grow in the process. That this wasn't an event. But my first year anniversary, I stood up at the podium, and this podium is so dangerous. Just like I use narcotics, I use ego. You know what I mean? I use you. I use arrogance. My disease is about me really being consumed with me. What I think, what I feel. Man wrapped up in self is a mighty small package. And when I got here, I was so consumed with me. Not only was I about 150 pounds, and I'm 210 now, you dig? I had three teeth up top. I had to do that so y'all could see my N.A. grill, right? Yeah. But see, I didn't come in here to be so rigid that I can't laugh and have some fun up in here. But I came in here three shades darker, you know, a lot of low self-esteem, and as a result of staying in the process, not interrupting the process, I done gained some freedoms that I never dreamt before. I told y'all what I came in here to get, and I've gotten so much more. But it's a result of laboring, you know, like a drunk on a horn, laboring in the process. You dig? And I've gotten so much more as a result. But that first year anniversary, I remember standing at the podium, and my family was seated at the front row, my cousin, my aunt, my mother, my stepfather. I remember I had stole my cousin's 9mm. And like I'm going to go stick somebody up. The crack boys had some good crack out there that day. I don't like crack, but what you give me for this? And so I took that opportunity at that podium at my first year anniversary to make an amends to my cousin as the tears flowed from my eyes. See, the ninth step is not intended to be made at the podium. You see, and I had to learn that out by getting a sponsor that I was willing to chase. Like I chased thing to get this program. Program. See, I didn't even know there was a program. I thought this was a fellowship of addicts that come together and help each other stay clean. But then y'all told me the hit later was, oh, you got to do more than go to meetings, Walston. What do you mean? Oh, did you just go sit down at the dope man's house for an hour a day? See, I had to hear that the disease of addiction was centered in my thinking. And if I was to change, it was going to be because a profound change was going to take place that began in my thinking. And I couldn't lean in my own thinking. I was amazed to find out that the theme of this convention is we came to Narcotics Anonymous as a result of the wreckage of our past. The last thing we expected was an awakening of the spirit. As a human being, as an addict, I lived with a powerless condition. Y'all told me that in the first step. Powerless. But there's an answer. And the answer is the spirit that I put to sleep. So the spirit had to be reawakened. And the wreckage of my past had to be dealt with in order for the spirit to totally come to life. And so I sought out to do those kind of things. I sought out to kind of be all right with Walston. You ever heard of a dope fiend named Walston? You know, they had my name spelled in some stuff, correspondence, they said it. I said, it's typical. You know, my name is never pronounced. It's not Ralston Perina. It's Walston. And I just share that to say that the feelings associated with just the mispronunciation of my name and what I did with those feelings got me right to Narcotics Anonymous. Today, my feelings are not so important. That's a good thing to know. See, because I thought it was always about what I thought and what I felt. So the freedom started to come on slowly as a result of me getting with this sponsor, identifying a sponsor. I heard the guy share, and I heard him share about the things that, you know, I like. I heard about the penitentiaries he had gone to. I said, damn, he'd been to a lot of penitentiaries. And then I would hear about the spiritual principles he was living in his life. You know, and I said, I want what he got. And I got to that guy, and I got his number, and I started chasing him to do step work because I wanted what he had. And I labored, and I've been laboring at the process. Now, that ain't to say, because the steps don't make me perfect. Steps just make me careful. The steps help me build this relationship with a higher power that I never had before. I thought it was all about me, but it's really all about me getting the right relationship with a higher power. You see, I wasn't able to be all right with you because I wasn't all right with me. Curly hair and playing a clarinet in Lincoln Heights, Northeast Washington, was not fashionable. You better learn how to fight. So I wasn't all right with me from early on, before drugs. You know what I mean? BC, before crack. You know, I had to kind of begin to get all right with me, and the sponsor helped me do that. So as I went through this process, and Rob talked about how the steps 8 and 9 kind of go together, he talked about how when he made his list, that kind of led right into 9. And I had a conversation earlier today with a friend of mine out front. We were talking about whether one should be on their list or not. And I know there are probably people in here who were on their list. And the good thing about Narcotics Anonymous is that you can come in here and find a suit that fits you. I think Rob mentioned that he was talking about his experience. And so I'm glad to have the opportunity to share my experience. And my experience with the beginning of the 8th and 9th step was that I was not on my 8th step list. And I want to read this in here because I think it's very appropriate to lead into what I'm talking about. It says, this process has called on us to examine our lives, identify our character defects, and become aware of how we harmed others when we acted on those defects. Now we must do everything we can to repair the harm we've caused. Others. You see, the preceding 7 steps kind of helped me get all right with me. See, my disease is about me being so consumed with me that I'm on the top of every list. Self-centered in the extreme. What I want, what I need, what I think. You see? And so by the time I got to 8, it wasn't about me. Or at least I was trying to make it less about me. My 7th step started introducing me to some more levels of humility born from the humiliation I got from that royal ass whipping I took before I got to 1 and saved by the grace. And so I came in here with a little bit of humility when I raised my hand and said, my name is Walston and I'm an addict. And I never told anybody I was Walston and I don't know how to live. So that humility had to continue to grow. I had to take all of the principles that were embodied in those preceding steps to the next step in order for me to remove the things that were blocking me from the grace. The grace, undeserved favor. I did everything not to be here, but by the grace, I'm here. Oh, if I got a powerless condition, sound like I better be trying to stay in the grace. Because if I ain't in the grace, I'm caught up in me. If I'm caught up in me, I'm caught up in the disease. For me, it's just that simple. Now, I'm often caught up in me. But what the seventh step also done for me was help me try to find some balance. That's always my struggle, that balance. You know what I mean? I know ain't nobody never had that cable that you get without the monthly bill. Yeah. See, I had it. You know, I got a sponsee that sells the hookup. Anybody know what the hookup is? Yeah, just nod every now and then. That's what I need to see. Yeah. Now, I'm supposed to be showing him the way, right? But how much does the hookup cost? Give me the hookup. Matter of fact, give me two of the hookups. See, so I'm not trying to come up here and sound holier than thou, y'all. You need to know that I'm just trying to be careful because I don't want to go back where I came from. That's the hit. But I'm telling you, I keep getting these freedoms because I keep practicing. I keep practicing. My grand sponsor say, this is a gymnasium of life we in today. It's the thing I most least like to do that's most likely I need to do. I need to move towards the resistance in this process. But I can find justification and reason not to do the work because I'm all right. No, you're not all right. If you are up there telling yourself you're all right, the humility allows me to have someone else come in and give me some help. So I had kind of straightened out these things. I had kind of straightened out these things by the time I got to 8. I was not on my list. It said other people I harmed. So I made my list. And I remember Moms was at the top, of course, because, you know, I beat the people closest to me. Sad, petty-ass addict that I was. Still can be. So Moms was at the top, and I did so much harm in the house till when it was time to make amends, it was like, what can I do? What you can do is change your behavior. You see, I had to stop doing those little, I come around the house and sit down, you know, I'm 2-3 years in the process now, and sit there, you know, and she say, how's that program you in? How them classes going? Them classes? All right. Well, are you still going? Yeah. Well, what's wrong? Oh, nothing. Call that dry begging, y'all. See, the time I left, I had a check, 2 bags of groceries. Huh? You gotta stop that. See, I manipulate, I play on you. See, you think you're a car, and I should tell myself, boy, you good. You know, and I believe that. He talked about living a lie. I heard people talk about living a lie. I was not Walston Barber, believe me, when I was coming up. I became Jonathan Pierce Lovejoy. And I can say that today because that's not who I'm trying to be. See, but I'm telling you, I lived a lie for so long, I began to believe the lie. And the lie had to die. Y'all told me the truth will set you free. And I started getting some freedoms up in here as a result of making myself vulnerable, you know, and starting to change the behavior and starting to be of service to my mother, you know, putting some things back and say, Mom, here, take the $20, put the gas, you know, just hit her off, mash her off something. You know, because I can't repay her for the harm I caused, but I can be the best person today that I can be. And so I kind of dealt with that and I continue to deal with that because I'm the oldest offspring, she's getting older, and I'm going to have to take care of her. And so we start now to dialogue about how I can best be there for her. Where the insurance policies at, Ma? Start proper preparation prevents poor performance. So I'm starting to do some things that I've never done before. Plan. I don't plan outcome. The pal greater than me that's got that. But I start to try to put things in motion the way I would like to see them come out. But also be all right enough with my relationship to know if they don't come out that way, you did your best. And so I moved on with my list, and I remember I was working at this place in a section of Alexandria, Virginia, where this guy had an herbal farm. He had a contract with Safeway, and I don't mean that kind of herbs, y'all. I'm talking about, you know, chives, dill, oregano, and the guy had his own little up-and-coming business. And he picked me off of some corner. I don't even remember. I was in much of a fog or a haze as I've ever been in life. But somehow we were connected, and he asked me to help run his business. Help run his business. Where's the checkbook? And so I was responsible for the labor, right, and the production. And one Christmas holiday, he says to me, I've got to go off to Costa Rica to check on the herbs on that side, you know, because we were getting stuff shipped into Dulles. And he left me with the checkbook. And it was Christmas, and I, too, had children that I wanted to ensure I had a good Christmas. And the little man that sits on my shoulder said, write a check. And I wrote a check. The thing about the disease is once I open that thing up, write another check. Every day I was, write a check. Rob said it, I'm going to put it back. How are you going to put back thousands of dollars? And when the man got back, to have to look at him in his face and say, I mean, I had the trucks, the keys, the checkbook. You know, how you going to look the man in the face and say, man, and he said, where's the money? The feelings is, shoot some more dope. Huh? That's all you do? And you grit it off. He was a sucker anyway. Shouldn't have never gave me the checkbook. Huh? That's what the disease was telling me. Now, I want to have y'all know that I have since then tried to repair that by calling calling the business, and the people I can't find. But I know that my finite mind can never understand God in his infinite wisdom, because he's already shown me that if I stay spiritually centered, he'll make a way where I don't see no way. So what I need to be trying to do is just preparing to make it right should I run into this guy. You know, I remember tearing up a young lady's car who I was involved with. You know, I was busy on a mission. Street was slick. I got to get there quick. Huh? Tow the car up. Now, I can't buy no cars. I'm sorry. But see, I can let it be known that I'm trying to repair that kind of harm. Amends, I believe, means to make right. And so by Webster's Dictionary, it says to make right. And so I never knew nothing about making amends before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. So today I know that I can try to make things right. And I seek the opportunities to do that. One of the greatest things that happened to me that I got to talk about was on my eighth step, I got to a place where I had to put down my daughter, one of my daughter's names, and I didn't know her name. Because I had abandoned her about 30 years now ago in Oregon at birth. I saw her one time. And so when I got to this opportunity to do this eighth step, and I had to put her name down, and I was like, I don't know the name. And I was like, you're not going to get to do anything in this area anyway. See, I'm in the ninth step doing the eighth step list. And the literature say, just make the list. For the eighth step. So I put down baby. And in parentheses, I put up for adoption. And as time would unfold, one day I was on the phone talking with my grand sponsor about these feelings of inadequacy, this inability to buy my children gifts another Christmas time like I wanted to. See, it's always about how I appear to you, how I can, you know, take the hammer out your hand. And that's, in fact, what the eighth and ninth steps do. They take the hammer out the other person's hand. See, it ain't about whether they receive it or not. It's about me sweeping off my side of the street. You see, getting freed up so I can go on in life and look folks in the eye and not have to look back and be concerned about the wreckage that I created that's blocking me from the grace that keeps me here. I got to get free. So I need to do this in spite of the consequence, but not to hurt anyone. So I was talking with him about these feelings, and the beep came over the phone. Y'all know the beep. You got to click over or you're going to miss the call. But I was caught up in self one more time. I'm not clicking over. I'm getting this help I need. See how quick the disease can attack me, and I don't even realize I'm being under attack. But that's why I got to keep laboring at the process, because I got a friend that says, a good soldier prepares for war in a time of peace. Well, I want to wait for the crisis to call my sponsor. But that's what I do. Oh, I'm all right. I don't need to call my sponsor. No, I have to do this. God will move mountains, but I think I better bring a shovel. Sound like work. See, I got to be committed to this process. I got a friend in here say, the road to recovery is always under construction. You see, so it's about me being vigilant at responding. So y'all kicked in before the second beat. And I said, hold on, I better click over. And I clicked over, and the person said, is this Ralston Balboa? I said, what? Who? They tried again, and they screwed it up. And I said, hold. You want Ralston? Barbara? And the lady said, yeah. I said, you got him. She said, well, I'm a private investigator. I said, what? I ain't doing. She said, no, hold on. She said, I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I just want to know if you would talk to your daughter. And I said, you know, the tears like automatically began to flow. And the lady started to cry, and I'm trying to figure out how this was made possible, but I need not figure it out. I know that I've been setting myself up in the process and becoming centered enough to be ready for it to happen. You see? And so I told the lady, of course I'll talk to her. And so she gave me the number, and we began to repair or begin, I guess I should say, a relationship that I never had with the long-lost daughter that I just shared with y'all about. And the following Christmas, she took a flight in to Baltimore, BWI Airport, and came and stayed at my home that Christmas. Beautiful young lady. And when she came down the runway, I didn't have to ask who she was. It was like the spirit connected. And every time I share that, chills run over my back. We went on, we now have been together some, I guess it's been about 7 years since that occurred. And since then, we've been able to bond. She sent me memorabilia on my anniversary, my clean date. And she's proud of her father. And she's born from a Mexican mother. And she got married. She met her brother by another one of my, marriages. I've been married a number of times, and I'm working on repairing those as well. I don't think I have enough time to talk about all the amends that have been made. But at any rate, she went to Atlanta, and she met my oldest son and decided to move from Albuquerque, New Mexico to Atlanta to take up and move. And she moved to Atlanta, and she met my son, and then she met a guy, and she decided to get married, and she invited who you think to the wedding. Now check this out. She's of Mexican descent and a little Afro-American here. Her adoptive parents are white. Her husband is of Jamaican descent. The marriage occurred in a Southern Baptist church. So we had a good old United Nations wedding. Huh? I'm talking about the miracles that have unfolded in my life as a result of this process. You dig? I'm talking about being woven back into the fabric of society, which I had torn myself away from because I was not all right with me. And so the miracles keep occurring by me staying in the process. Me just doing what y'all say do. And I keep getting freedoms and more miracles. And I said, shit, I better keep doing this. You know what? And I put more insurance on this right relationship that keeps me away from the powerless condition I live with. Because I have not forgot what a whole quarter, a cane, works, and a couple of dollars to get me a honey bun and a knee high. Oh, y'all don't feel me out there. I'm talking about being so caught up in what I need to feel like that I forget what's real. You see? And so, you know, I keep showing up in here and I keep experiencing the miracles. You know, I heard at this convention talking about the government is not doing the right thing to find Bin Laden. You know what I mean? And they need to send somebody like the IRS or the student loan people after them. Boy, they will find you. They found me.
And you see, what I do is I step up and I'll make agreements to pay, because they say when harm is done and it involves money, you don't just say you're sorry, pay the money back. You see, but what I do is I make agreements with you, and then I come out the gates sprinting. You know, I pay you off this month, next month, third month, but then I start trotting. You said you was going to give us $100, Walson. I don't have a 50. I'm going to send you 50. Huh? Next thing you know, I stop trotting and I'm walking. Before you know it, I'm not sending nothing. You see, because I know today that the way to spiritual growth is through being disciplined, something that I'm not. I'm the most undisciplined person you want to meet. That's the addict in me. So if I want to grow spiritually, Walston, you got to become more disciplined. You got to become more consistent. You know, we had a thing in Maryland called the Amnesty Program for us delinquent dads, right? I owe something like $55,000 in child support arrears right now. And believe me, it was more than that when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. Now, hear this before I go forward. In spite of that, I'm a homeowner today. You see, you need to know that whatever's confronting you, that God got a way of working it out where you don't see a way. See, he's bigger than I could ever imagine him to be. So I don't put no boundaries on my God. But at any rate, I got involved in an amnesty program, and one more time, I set up a payment plan. And I did the same thing. I'm going to pay, you know, consistently. But then I don't do it. I don't maintain it. So if they ever come and get me and y'all see me in handcuffs, just say, well, he was careful. He wasn't perfect. You see? But I know that whenever I expose my truth, help is on the way. Right? That's why I'm up here. That's why I expose myself. Because I want to get better in this process. I'm never going to be perfect. But somebody needs to know how my experience has helped me get to where I've gotten. And I do want to get further. So I keep telling my truth. And y'all help me find my greater truth. And anytime I get to a greater truth, I know I'm being rightly related to my higher power. It says here in this book, whenever possible, we discuss each of our amends with our sponsor before we set out to make it. That's important. You know, I always seek to invite the loving hand of the Creator into any amends making process, but that's not always possible. So what is possible for me is to kind of constantly work with my sponsor, to be in touch with the things that I need to be in touch with, because, you know, I like to think I know. But it's the things I learn after I think I know everything that help me the most. You know, and that's why I keep trying to, you know, maintain some posture of humility and showing up. The last thing I want to say before I sit down is that, you know, a block of wood will show the way, but we can show the way much better than anybody can, any block of wood. So it's important that, you know, we take a risk. We let people get to know us. We take the mask off and share our experience and how we've been able to experience the joy of recovery one day at a time. That's kind of my story. I'm sticking with it. I'm an addict named Walston. Thank y'all for letting me share.
I'd like to thank those who shared. Could someone come up and read just for...